I'd like to welcome back to the show Ari Samet. We met Ari probably almost 11 months ago. Ari is a pulmonologist at the Mount Sinai Hospital in Miami Beach. Ari, when we last spoke, we didn't have Omicron. We now do. What's going on in your hospitals? Are you packed? Who's coming in? How does it differ given this latest outbreak?
I would say the difference right now, most notably, is that the outpatient centers are really being packed. The emergency rooms are being loaded. And the hospital, thankfully, is picking up, but it's not as loaded at all.
So when I was in the hospital with you, how many patients, how many floors did we have as an example?
Well, I can't give the specifics for our hospital per se.
Fine. Did you have a floor? Did you have two floors?
Yeah, well, we had at least 3 to 4 floors of COVID packed. And now it's a little tricky because I'm a pulmonary critical care doctor, but the difference with the Omicron so far is that you're not necessarily admitted, thankfully, with COVID pneumonia. So it seems to have a different phenotype. There is a lot of sinusitis and, of course, respiratory symptoms and coughing, but there's not a lot of COVID pneumonia per se. So the pulmonologists are not routinely getting called for, let's say, an Omicron admission.
All right, let's break that down. So I guess I didn't appreciate this point, that the disease doesn't manifest itself in a pneumonia like I had. Describe when you get a chest X-ray now for an Omicron patient, how does it distinguish itself from a previous patient, or is it the frequency, or does the X-ray look different?
Right. So all this is still evolving here in South Florida, but you know, as you heard already, in South Africa, thankfully, you know, the illness is a different illness than the other COVID, but it's also different because it's not attacking the lungs in the same way, hopefully and thankfully. So you're not developing that bilateral strange peripheral infiltrate. It's more of a really bad flu-like illness for the people that are hospitalized, and they're there because they're completely drained. They might have a little renal insufficiency. You know, it's like a really bad case of flu. I would say that's, you know, people that are admitted for the flu are most often admitted for flu-like illness and not necessarily pneumonia. This is how this Omicron is so far playing out.
Well, it sounds like that's just great news in the sense that the weakness of the human body was the over-exaggerated response to the disease, flooding the lungs with water, creating an infection and creating pneumonia. You're saying this one, you're not getting that. You're getting something else. When you say like there's renal problems, it's like they didn't have enough fluids. Is that the issue?
Yeah, I think the best way where you're driving at is to look at it like this. In South Africa, there's 70% less hospitalizations compared to the Delta. For Omicron versus the Delta, right? Even in Scotland, 60% less, England, 40 to 50% less, right? But when you're talking about so many cases, here's the kicker. Omicron is skyrocketing, and it's only going to get worse for a period of time. So if you, for instance, initially they were saying 1.2% of all cases in South Africa were being admitted versus 20% of the Delta cases. But if you take 1% of 30,000, you know, a day, that adds up to a lot of hospitalizations. So we're going to see a lot of hospitalizations, but we're not going to see the type that we were used to before, which was really only COVID pneumonia. We were only admitting people that had hypoxemia or low oxygen. Now it's a different beast.
So I suspect that once they had pre-existing conditions, maybe something with the heart or something, some other major organ, I would be coming in because my heart would be under pressure. Is that the sort of thing we're talking about?
Pre-existing conditions? It's going to be people more than likely that just can't handle the bad flu and a lot of fear too. I recall talking to an infectious disease doctor who's following a lot of the patients on the floor, And he's like, wow, this is completely different. You know, maximum 1 to 2 liters of oxygen for the majority of patients. I'm in the ICU, for instance, right now. And, you know, there aren't that many of the COVID pneumonia patients at all. You know, we have leftovers from the Delta. And we are seeing, remember, it's 90% Omicron, but there is 10% Delta. So we probably, the COVID pneumonia patients probably have that bug, not the Omicron.
You know, when I met with your partner in crime, Dr. Tuda, who runs infectious disease at Mount Sinai, what he told me when I first met with him when I was admitted, he said he had seen thousands of patients and they were all exactly the same. And he said, I know exactly what's going to happen to you tomorrow. I know what's going to happen to you the day after that. And I know what you look like when I release you from the hospital 10 days from now. It seems like that story is now flipped on its head. This is a different patient with a different series of problems. And they sound more unique and specialized depending upon the pre-existing conditions that patient has.
Right. And not only that, I think that's true, 100% what you just said. But I think what we're going to see here locally is that the Omicron will depress the immune system. I have already seen this in a couple of patients, and then leads you to develop complications from that depressed immune system. Like I have a bacterial pneumonia here who has COVID positive. And so that is what I think we're going to start seeing, as opposed to COVID pneumonia. The people that we might see is COVID related pneumonia.
One of the long-term implications of COVID is this very long-dated fatigue, brain fog, and the like. Do you think that was a causation from the pneumonia, or do you think it's some other element to the disease? And do you suspect that if it was from the pneumonia, that Omicron won't be causing that long hauler problem?
Right. So obviously, it's too early to tell about the long haul syndrome from Omicron, but I think this is going to be a completely different disease, like a coronavirus, O1H1. You know, they have four other coronaviruses. This is a different one. I think it's going to be more like the flu. In fact, we were talking with another infectious disease doctor. There is overlap in the testing. Some people are testing positive for the flu, but they really have Omicron. There is cross-reactivity with some of the flu antigen somehow and this coronavirus antigen, that it comes out positive on the flu test. And I don't think it's going to act like the flu. That's really all the people that I am seeing with the, it's almost exactly like the flu. I'm drained of energy. I have sinus stuff and, you know, stuffiness. I lost my taste and smell, a few of them, much less than before. But those are related to the sinus congestion so far.
One of the things you told me in January was, if you're 80 years old, go get that monoclonal antibodies ASAP. How do you view it at this time?
Right. So as you know, the state of Florida is quickly being inundated. All the sites for monoclonal antibodies are being inundated and they're being used up. And I set up probably over 100 or 150 in the last like 4 days, I don't know, maybe 100. It's crazy. But the truth is, it's unclear if it works. So Regeneron, they're even updating the EUA in the next couple of days. It doesn't have in vitro activity against Omicron. Neither does BAM, the combination bamlanivimab and I forgot the second drug that it's combined with. It doesn't have. The one monoclonal antibody that does have effect is the sotrovimab, which we don't have available here. But anecdotally, I can tell you for sure, patients that we've sent who've gotten the Regeneron say they feel better. A lot of them feel better. So I don't know what to make of that. So we're giving it to them because that's the best thing that was out there versus the other COVID variants. But I suspect that once the Pfizer drug comes in, the pill, and maybe the Merck pill as well, that we're going to quickly stop this monoclonal antibody infusion, basically because of the in vitro ineffectiveness.
What about steroids? I know I responded very positively to the steroids. What's going on there? But I suspect that you use the steroids as a response to the pneumonia. Does it have any applicability here?
Right. So that's going to, the jury's out on that too, because, you know, a lot of people will have lingering symptoms like sinus symptoms. And so typically for a flu-like illness, if you have persistent symptoms, we, you know, we typically do use steroids for the sinus congestion, and it usually works. So I think, and I've already done it on a couple of patients who've had COVID sinusitis here, and it seems to work. But that's going to be, you're right, the utility of steroids in Delta COVID and the other COVID variants was when you had a hypoxemia related, low oxygen related to the COVID. Now, because it's not affecting the lungs, many people will not be using steroids. The majority of people won't be on steroids for this Omicron.
Sometimes if you get a sinus infection, you choose antibiotics. Will that be a popular medical response, medication response?
Yeah, I think the number one medication that will probably be used is, again, a Z-Pak, because people are so used to using it, and it has anti-inflammatory properties. It sort of makes sense. So we're going to start seeing that. And regular sinusitis medicines like sinus rinses followed by
That's the teapot?
Yeah, neti pot.
Neti pot, sure. Yeah.
And I think if there was one, you know, Flonase, I shouldn't say the names, like intranasal steroid. Intranasal steroids will be probably effective.
Let's run through three hypotheticals. You're 21 years old. You're coming home from college. You just got COVID. Ari, what should my child be doing?
Yeah, more than likely, if the child has no immune deficiencies, it would just be sitting tight and drinking, hydrating, and, you know, doing some sinus rinses, potentially Flonase, that sort of thing, and just supportive care.
How many days after the COVID test comes back can that child go back into the world?
Right. So this is going to change probably on Monday. They have to change the isolation guidelines because they're really outdated. But as of today, it's 10 days from the symptoms, which actually was a change. It used to be 10 days from the test. Now it's 10 days from the symptoms. So let's say you started Sunday, but you got your test on Wednesday. You would be out the next Wednesday. So it's 10 days from the symptoms as opposed to before. But I think they're going to change it to 5 days probably on Monday.
Really?
Yep.
So your contagious period is really a very short period of time. That's great news too, right?
What I have noticed with this Omicron business, I think that your onset of disease is faster. You catch it. It's very catchy. It's five times as catchy as the other one. So you get it faster, but it also leaves faster.
That's great news.
It's good for the people that it leaves.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So that was the 20-year-old. Let's pick a 50-year-old next. 50-year-old, no pre-existing conditions. Oh, shit, my kid just gave it to me. Now what? Ari, what should we do?
So that's why it gets tricky for the reason why you're even testing, because the truth is right now the monoclonal antibody infusions are sort of drying up. I would have said like a week ago when there was a glut of them, yeah, go for it. Today, I would actually say there are actually clinical trials out there. There is a drug, I forgot the name, but SAB Therapeutics. They're doing an NIH clinical trial, active 2 clinical trial, looking at polyclonal antibody infusions. That's basically sort of like the monoclonal antibody cocktail, but it's polyclonal, and it's made by injecting horses in their lymph nodes, however they make it. But it basically targets the spike proteins more generally. So potentially it could be beneficial, and it's safe, but it's effective versus Omicron. So in other words, if you go into a trial here in Miami Beach, they have several centers, you actually have a 50% chance of getting a medicine that at least has in vitro activity versus this Omicron. So that's sort of interesting. So that would be a possible. Now, you said a 50-year-old without risk factors actually would be like that 20-year-old. Again, there is a chance of hospitalization, but it doesn't look like it's COVID pneumonia per se. So I would feel a little more comfortable sitting tight.
So when you say sitting tight, do you want me to go get a Z-Pak or not?
I mean, that would be completely not you know, medically, I mean, I would probably do it because there's nothing else. I wouldn't use ivermectin or Plaquenil like the other, you know, docs would say. But, you know, Zithromax would be, you know, potentially worthwhile, but it's not proven.
All right, let's review. If you're 50 and you're vaccinated and you develop a sinus infection, then take a Z-Pak. You just mentioned this polyclonal trial, which is only available for the unvaccinated. Let's change our hypothetical example. You have a 50-year-old unvaccinated COVID-positive patient. What do you want him to do?
Oh, yes. So the unvaccinated person, I would strongly recommend, I mean, you have to try to get the monoclonal antibody. Hopefully they'll have the sotrovimab. It so happens that we're talking at an interesting window of time right now. We're running out of the monoclonal, and even the monoclonal we have doesn't work, potentially. And we're a week away from the Pfizer pill. So we're literally a week away from what could be a very effective treatment. And it is a very effective against the Omicron. So that person will need to get the Pfizer pill. They'll need to be, you know, put in front of the list. But in the meantime, this week, you would try to get the Regeneron. At least it's better than nothing. And, you know, if the unvaccinated are the ones that I'm worried about with this Omicron.
Do you care if you got two vaccinated or have, you know, three?
Yeah, we're seeing quite a few of three vaccinated people, triple vaccinated, who have the Omicron. But it does seem that they're protected versus severe illness, probably because there is more than just antibody response, probably a T cell immunity, a different part of the immune system fighting against the overall virus. So I think that they're going to be better off even if they don't get anything.
Okay. You are 80. And it hits you a little bit. We'll do unvaccinated, vaccinated, respectively. Unvaccinated 80-year-old.
Yeah, unvaccinated 80-year-old. Again, I would push for it. If you can't, so now here's a good question, Larry, that has to be answered. Would you send the unvaccinated 80-year-old with Omicron for Regeneron, which does not have in vitro activity, or would you, but you're 100% guaranteed to get it? Let's say you could find the place or find the concierge doctor has it. Or would you send them to a clinical trial which has 50% placebo and 50% something that you know has Omicron activity? I think the answer is you probably would do the 50%, you know, Omicron activity. That's what I would do. And then hope that the Pfizer pill comes, because all those trials allow you to take, you know, if something comes along on the market that's, you know, that shows efficacy. So that's what I would do for my patients.
And do you distinguish between the vaccinated and unvaccinated there, the 80-year-olds?
Yeah, if they're vaccinated, you know, I think there is maybe a placebo effect to getting that monoclonal antibody Regeneron at least, you know, so I would probably push for that. And again, anecdotally, there are people that respond. So the vaccinated person, I'd feel more comfortable with just Regeneron.
Okay. What do you think is going to happen in the next couple of weeks? I mean, people are still out and about. Omicron is super contagious. The vaccine doesn't seem to stop if you get it from shedding it with the vaccine. We saw what exponentials look like when things weren't as contagious as this. If it's 5x contagious and R naught is 3 and not 1.5, I mean, oh my God, the whole population is going to get this thing in a few weeks. How's this going to play out?
So this is a fascinating conversation because we have to learn from history, right? We learn from the H1N1. We have a lead time. In H1N1, years ago, we had a lead time. We learned from New Zealand how they dealt with it. Now we have South Africa, we have the UK, Scotland. They've already had they're at their peak. You know, now South Africa is actually coming down. It's gonna come down as fast as it went up in South Africa. That's what we're seeing there. So we have to study the South African experience and see exactly how it's been. Speak to some of your South African friends and find out what happened, what was effective there.
So I guess I'm shocked by the South African experience. I don't understand just the pure math that if you have an R naught of 3 and a population where the vaccine has limited efficacy, why it why it just doesn't go straight to the moon. Why did it top off so quickly? I'm just baffled. So I don't have to be South African to think about that question in an abstract form. Ari, what do you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's, you know, some people are protected even with two vaccines. I don't think they had triple vaccines in South Africa. They all have double. They had a very, very high vaccination rate, but it was double, I believe. So, you know, you're going to see higher spike, and then now they probably all have it, and it's coming down very fast. So I think we're going to see the same thing. I think it's going to be 6 weeks from the time that it hit here, probably like 4 days ago. So I think we have 6 weeks of question mark. But I think it's going to be impacted on this with the Merck pill, and the Pfizer pill is going to be coming out. I think in the next 2 weeks, there's going to be a sort of like a mad rush. Everybody's going to call, you know, for favors. How can I get the Pfizer pill? That's the biggest challenge coming up, is going to be the allocation of medicine during a pandemic hitting. This is like the worst time for the medicine to come out when everybody needs it.
That's awesome.
I don't think we'll ever have something like this. You know, it was planned that a Pfizer would come out with their pill when it was a relative lull. So then you have it, you could produce it, and have it's going to be produced at a time where it's maximally being sucked up.
I also imagine there's going to be a huge rush to enter the hospital. How is Mount Sinai preparing for the, you know, couple thousand patients who have to come in over the next 6 weeks?
Well, I specifically can't talk on behalf of Mount Sinai.
How about a hospital that looks just like it in Miami Beach?
A hospital. Yeah, I think that we have to be – the ERs around locally are very, very smart, and they're trying not to admit people that really don't need to be admitted. I think that's the key. And one thing we learned from the prior pandemic phases is that we can branch out pretty quickly. Like, you know, the governor did a good job at least opening up things like the convention center. We can mobilize other places if we need to do it. I mean, I'm not in any talks about that in the hospital. I'm not saying that's even talked about. I'm just saying I'm confident that if we do get a rush, I think we're prepared enough to know how to take the next steps. The emergency room doctors know when to push that button.
In March of 2020, everyone said the weakness is we're not going to have enough ventilators. And then we found out that the ventilators actually killed you, so we're not going to use them. And then when I entered the hospital, you brought in that 35-liter super-duper oxygen machine for me, and you said, we just have enough of them. But this time, that won't be the constraint either. What will the constraint be in terms of hospital supplies that are going to be in high demand?
And this is completely postulating for me, but that's a great question. I think, first of all, still it needs to be seen. Maybe there will be pneumonia, you know, when you take the percentages, you know, down. But assuming that won't be the case, I think just having staff, if you look at the New York Times, they discussed staff being out because they're hit. I think that's going to be the biggest constraint. We're going to, you know, potentially you have to think about the doctors and the nurses. That's why our isolation period has to be lower, 5 days, because we'll be able to bounce back right away. So I think staffing and things like dinner and lunch and physical therapy and things like that would be more of an issue, I imagine, than the actual ventilator high flow.
Would you be willing to take in volunteers to help give the food, change the sheets?
I guess it depends on which hospital. You know, years ago, many, many years ago, like 100 years ago when they had the pandemic and the flu pandemic, they used, you know, medical students were, you know, even in New York and during the first phase, they used medical students, people that didn't even graduate yet who were rounding, you know. So I could see, you know, hopefully I don't think that's going to happen here, but I've been wrong predicting other things.
Can I give you the silver lining and you push back? Omicron doesn't sound that dangerous. It's pushed out Delta. Everyone's going to get this thing. Everybody. It doesn't sound like it's going to kill that many people. Will it provide equivalent to a vaccine to the unvaccinated? Will it give another response function for the T cells against a future variant. Could this end COVID for all practical purposes if everyone gets Omicron?
Right. I mean, I like the silver lining. I think the silver lining, but remember, everything is a percentage. So when you have so many people, there are people that unfortunately are going to pass away for the lesson that we're going to all learn. I just, my gestalt is that it's like you're saying, that we're going to get faster to a herd immunity. But then what about the next COVID variant? So I think the silver lining really from Larry Bernstein should be the pan COVID vaccine that's coming out that they're working on. There is a vaccine that is in phase two trials that is actually for every single variant. So I think that's a better silver lining, although that's good what you said too. And the other medicines, that each medicine has a problem, like the Merck pill has maybe not 100% effective, maybe it's 30% effective, but the Pfizer pill has a lot of interactions. So every silver lining has a black lining, whatever, but the overall positive of getting to herd immunity, at least for now, and then waiting for this COVID vaccine that could cover everything would be very optimistic.
Why would it cover everything? I would have thought that when we look at, in the mRNA example, they showed a spike protein, they figured that out, and then this new variant is a 35 mutations or whatever the number is on the original spike protein. Why do you think the pan would work? Why? How can we predict what it's doing? What is it about the spike protein that we can cover every potential mutation?
Yeah, I don't know exactly how this new vaccine works. It's in phase two trials. I know Dr. Topol, T-O-P-O-L.
Oh, yeah, I had him on the show.
Oh, really? Oh, my goodness. So he's, he's talked about that a lot. I think he's involved in that. But that is the
ultimate.
But that's the ultimate for this pandemic.
All right, I close each session on a note of optimism. Ari, what are you optimistic about besides the Panglossian all-encompassing vaccine?
Yeah, that's a lot to be optimistic about. But I am optimistic that in 6 weeks' time, we'll have so many new things in the armamentarium, pills, vaccines, a wherewithal that we've accomplished from our previous experience that we could handle these things more effectively and hopefully deal with a little bit of pandemonium, especially with the holidays coming, and just orderly conduct as we are good human beings and helping one another.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.